Let's see. Okay, record on this computer. Recording. It says it's recording. So
yeah,
great. Okay. I'm Vance Stevens, and I'm in Malaysia, Penang, Malaysia. Which is there's a big rainstorm going out there. We were sitting on our balcony watching that come in. I'm going to post all these lightning pictures on Facebook. But anyway, back indoors now, and I'm talking with Karen Schwartz, and this is May 11th. 2020, and this is Learning Together event episode number 461. So we've been doing this for 10 years, and it's also Talon, a Talon teaching and learning in isolation. I think it's our 14th episode, something like that. It might be 15th, I'm not sure. But anyway, Karen has produced some very interesting materials about teaching, I'll just see if I get it right. Okay, so you're teaching English and I think literature also, is that correct?
For the curriculum, or do you mean just in my
your
background
context.
Or?
Your context, huh? What do you do?
Yeah, so I have taught English in the past. I have a bachelor's in English, or an English education, and a master's in English. And I have taught writing at the college level as a graduate instructor and an online adjunct. I also taught English as a foreign language in Korea. Mm-hmm. And I've also taught high school English at a rural school out here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
After being in education for a few years, I transitioned into educational technology, and I worked at a company called Tinker, which is in the learn to code space. So if you've ever heard of other resources like Scratch or code.org, or
mm-hmm.
Just any of those companies that have a program that teaches kids to code using block coding, Tinker is in that space, and they have a block coding platform. And
can
when
you
I was
those, oh no, you can't do
oh.
that. Can you spell out those names? Where are you working? You said Pinterest or something like that, but I couldn't really
Yeah, so the company I worked at was called Tinker, T-Y-N-K-E-R.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
So I worked there, and I was responsible for marketing, as well as for editing the coding courses. And so mm-hmm. as part of my marketing work, I was doing a lot of research about how coding intersects with different disciplines, because
mm-hmm.
I had to write these articles about, you know, why your kids should learn to code, and why
mm-hmm.
students should learn to code, and why teachers should introduce it to the classroom, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I was doing research, I just found a lot of really interesting parallels between coding and English language arts, and a lot of areas where they intersected, such
mm-hmm.
as with natural language processing, and how if you could learn basic, you know, English grammar and language elements, you could write some basic programs sort of in the spirit of natural language processing, which is this subset of computer science where you teach a computer system how to understand and respond to human language, whether that's written input or verbal input.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up leaving that company and then just decided to dig more into this. And so I learned Python, which is a programming language that's used
mm-hmm.
a lot in natural language processing. And I learned more about NLP itself and computer science. And I ended up writing this GCPH curriculum that basically is written with English teachers in mind. I was kind of had in mind more, you know, the high school English teacher who wants to bring these ideas into their classroom, but it could
mm-hmm.
also be applicable to people who are teaching English in other contexts as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of based on the principle of, you know, help students review basic grammar and English language concepts, and then help them start to think computationally by really articulating what those rules are, and then teach them some basic Python, and then help them build some basic programs with with Python based on those rules. And that by doing so, that can help reinforce their knowledge of English language as they start to think sort of categorically about language and have to, you know, employ some of those computational and critical thinking skills to build those programs.
Okay, and that's how we got together, because apparently, did you come on Jennifer Vershore and my article? Is that how?
I did. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was doing some research to just try to find other people who were doing research in this same space, because I was looking online and I couldn't really find any other companies or organizations. And maybe they are out there and I just haven't found them yet, but I couldn't mm-hmm. really find a lot of other companies or organizations that were either producing products with this sort of philosophy in mind, or that were doing research with this sort of philosophy in mind. And then, yeah, I came across that article that you wrote with Jennifer, and it was just really interesting that you had also done some research in integrating coding concepts into teaching English.
Yeah.
And so that's why I reached out and thought, hey, maybe this is something we can talk more about, or I can learn from the research and the work that you've already done. So
I worked for 8 years as a teaching computing. Actually, I was an EFL teacher for a long time, and part of that ESL, English is a second language, because I worked in the States for teaching people who were moving into college. So they had to learn it as a second language. But then up until about the, well, actually 2003, I think I worked, I'd been an EFL teacher, and then I was also an administrator at a Military Language Institute, which we started. But when that contract folded, I got a job at Petroleum Institute in Abu Dhabi. And they had two vacancies available. One was in the computing department and one was in the EFL department. And they seemed to be amenable to considering me for either one. So I thought, well, why not? I'll go into computing. And so they hired me. And so I taught, before this, I had been teaching computer-assisted language learning, right? That was what I called my field. And as I was teaching computing to these EFL learners, at the engineering students at the Petroleum Institute in Abu Dhabi, I was teaching them computing and coding, often coding, HTML, Visual Basic, things like that. And I used to call it LACL. Language assisted computer learning. So it was basically popping that on its head. But I've been interested in coding and, teaching coding to students gets them speaking English, gives them something really to talk about, you know. So what you're looking for when you're teaching a language is to find something that students want to communicate about. So if you tack on a subject, and actually there's a whole CLIL theory about that, teaching English in conjunction with another topic. So anyway, that seems to work quite well. That was the approach that I was involved in for 8 years. I taught there for 8 years. So anyhow, well, that's how I came on that. I've done a lot of coding myself and software development and stuff like that. So I wouldn't say I'm really great at it, but I'm into social, what I call SMALL now, not CAL, I call it SMALL, social media assisted language learning, and I'm retired now, so I'm in it more. I'm more into teacher training, so I'm quite interested in things like what you're doing, because they are adaptable for multiple contexts, and one of them being English as a foreign language. And a lot of the people who follow Learning Together, some of them are English teachers, a lot of them are, and but others are educational technologists, or there's a lot of people in games. And I usually meet the people who, like in Minecraft, for example, who are in the United States in secondary school, K to 12. So we span all kinds of people. But I don't see other people clamoring to get into our waiting room. So why don't we go ahead and start the presentation? And you can, like you said, you're going to stop every so often and give me a chance to chime in. Can you see the participants in the chat? Right now it's the two of them.
No.
Okay. I might mention you're going blind. You're doing this on a cell phone. Possibly,
yeah.
Possibly you haven't really gotten out of bed. You just picked up your phone by the, is it 6 o'clock in the morning where you are? 6:15 in California. And so anyway, it doesn't really matter where you are. But anyhow, go ahead, tell us. And I'm going to put on the slideshow. I'll put on a slide share because right now people are looking at my picture and your icon, which is a telephone. So let me go ahead and do that share that I was doing. So this will make it, there we are. Oops, I got to go back a couple of slides. How do I do that? Okay, here's a slider. There we go. So, okay, we are at teaching natural language processing for English classes. So go ahead, Karen, take it away.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much for inviting me to give this presentation. I feel really honored to be connected with this community, and I'm really excited to chat here. So I guess I will just jump in to the presentation. So I'm going to do this in kind of a reverse order than maybe a lot of presentations are giving in. I'm going to save the kind of the context of why this is so compelling to me more towards the end. And I'm actually going to start off with the presentation with some more technical and meaty stuff, just kind of while everyone's level of concentration is maybe a little bit higher. So I'm going to talk about the coding project that you can see in the first couple of slides. And this is a simile generator. And this is one of the projects that I talk about in the curriculum that I wrote. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me when you're shifting slide.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're on the slide that says simile generator code at the top. And so what you're looking at is a program that I wrote using Python, which is a programming language. And so this is actually a program that you can have your students write. And it's one that uses natural language processing on a very basic level. So let's talk about what's happening in this Python code. First off, I mean, Vance, you probably already know this, but for the benefit of people who may be, who may listen to this recording later, I'll just explain a little bit about variables and values.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can think of a variable as a box, and the value is the thing that you put in the box when we're talking about programming. And so Python is a language like others where we have variables and values. So in Python, the name of our variable goes on the left side of the equal sign, and the value that's assigned to that variable goes on the right side of the equal sign when we are writing a line of code. So at the very top of this program, we actually have the word import random. This means that we are importing the random module that Python has already built into it, into our program. So we're just kind of drawing on this feature that's inbuilt into Python. And so this means that we are giving our program the ability to randomly generate some values, and we will see that at work in just a minute. So we have those words import random as our first line of code. And then after that, a couple lines down, we have two variables. The first variable is called abstract_noun. And assigned to this variable is a value, which in this case is a list of words. And so our list constitutes the value that we're assigning to our variable. And so the words that are in this list are love, forgiveness, and patience, and penitence. And when you are building this program with your students, you can have them use whatever nouns they want. These are just the nouns that I happen to choose. So below this variable, we have another variable, and this one is called concrete_noun. And assigned to this variable is a list of words as well. And these words are the words wind, light, the sea, and darkness. So do you have any questions so far about what's happening with the code?
Well, one really interesting thing when working with students is it might occur to them to say, well, can't I just ask people to, can I prompt people for abstract nouns and prompt people for concrete nouns? Now, of course, you could do that. You can develop your program where it would come up and would ask the user to type a few abstract nouns or concrete nouns, and then kind of like an ad libs game. I don't know if you're familiar with ad libs, but building stories by getting random words. Give me a noun, give me an adverb, and then creating a story that it's kind of nonsense but humorous at the same time. So yeah, okay. Anyway, but I see. So but if the students build this program themselves, then they'll write in a few abstract nouns and a few concrete nouns, and then they can play with it and see what it produces.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it sounds like you were saying, I mean, I hadn't thought of that, but that could definitely be an approach for you. Have the user enter those things with this particular program. We're actually not requiring any user input, but that's definitely a way that you could, you know, possibly expand it to have the user provide that input. Sure. So below those two variables, we then have two additional variables. The first one is called abstract_noun. And so notice that the noun in this variable name is singular. So it is a different variable than the abstract_nouns variable that we had earlier. We're dealing with separate variables here. And so with this variable, this is where we're going to use our program's ability to randomly generate some values. We have the name of our variable, which is abstract_noun, then equal sign, and then we have the words random.choice, open parentheses, abstract_nouns, close parentheses. And so this basically means that the program is going to randomly pull an item from our list of abstract nouns and assign that item as the value to the variable abstract_noun, because so when we use that random.choice, we're basically calling on that import random module, that random module that we imported earlier. And we're saying, okay, random module, I want you to go to work now. And I want you to pull an item from that earlier list. So then right underneath that, so by this point, we have told the program to randomly choose an item from our list of abstract nouns and assign it as the value to our variable abstract_noun. And so now we're going to do the same thing with our concrete noun. So our next line of code will be concrete_noun equal sign random.choice open parentheses concrete_noun close parentheses. And so now our program will randomly choose an item from our list of concrete nouns and assign it as the variable of the, excuse me, and assign it as the value of the variable concrete_noun. And in our next line of code, we're going to declare a final variable, and this variable is called simile. So I'll pause here and say that when you are building this program with your students, it allows you to discuss with your students the different elements of, for example, a literary device such as the simile. And so for the sake of this project, I'm basically saying that a simile consists of two nouns, one of them abstract and the other concrete, joined together by the words is like. Now, I know that in reality, similes can take a variety of other forms, but just for the sake of this project, I've chosen to use this simile formula, if you will. When you are creating this program with your students, you may choose to make that a little bit different. So looking back at the code, we have our variable simile. And so we're going to say that the value of this variable is abstract_noun plus sign is like plus sign concrete_noun. And so then after that, we're going to have the program show us this simile by calling the print function. And so on our next line of code, we're going to actually have the word print, open parentheses, simile, and close parentheses. And so that word print, that's a function. And when we call that, we are actually saying, okay, program, I want you to show me the result of whatever is in the parentheses. And so we're saying, I want the program to show me whatever the value of that variable simile is. So when we run our program, we're going to see the value of that variable simile. And so if you want to go ahead and go to the next slide, at the top we have the word simile generator output. And so you should see there's some kind of file information in the first line, but then at the second line, it says impatience is like darkness. And so what's happened here when we ran the program, it basically just chose, like we talked about, some random nouns from those lists to join together with the words is like. And so this is kind of fun because every time I run the program, I have no idea what the abstract concrete nouns will be. The program will just randomly pull from those lists and pair them together there. And so this can be fun for students because once you've built that initial code, they can just keep hitting run and keep getting different similes. And, you know, if you're in a group of students, you can, compare similes and say, what did your program generate and things like that. So any questions or comments at this point?
I fully understand how it works. I guess another thing you could do is for having is like, you could put a variable there and you could then put in some other things like is very like or resembles or something like that. Maybe even prompt students for that kind of thing. And then pull randomly something that would go into the linkage or something like that. But there's so many variations. And having students input their own, with the LACL students I taught, you would get them to design elements. In other words, you improve on the program. But anyway, when are you envisaging that students use this program and then add words to it, or how would you have them use this particular program? They would develop it.
So once they've got the program in their coding editor, we would say, then they can just keep hitting run. And then, what you see that impatience will like darkness, impatience is like darkness, that will come up in what's called the terminal. If you're running Python, you have kind of one screen that is where you're typing in the code. And then, for example, in the code editor that I use, I have a green run arrow. And so when I hit that arrow, the program runs. Mm-hmm. And then it'll automatically bring up something called the terminal, and that's where you see this output. And so what students would be doing is just once they've created the code, they can just hit run as many times as they want, and then they'll see different versions of the similes that pop up just depending on what the program randomly generates. Go ahead.
Well, I would also ask them to complete a sentence, so they get a simile and then they have to complete it. Impatience is like darkness. Mm. Why? Impatience is like darkness, okay? Because you're always waiting without knowing what is there. I don't know. Something like that. Mm. Get them to write a second sentence.
Oh, interesting. So would you have them do that in the code or just as a verbal conversation?
As a follow-on, I suppose, with the students that I had, anyway, for anybody learning or taking English at this level, it would be something interesting. You could just get them to, I think, if you have four inputs and four abstract nouns, you'd have 16 combinations. So the more you add, the more combinations you get. So, I don't know. I'm just thinking of ways to develop the language. So one way I would think of to develop the language would be to have the students actually improve the code, and some might like to do that, or if they want to use other people's code, have them elaborate on the similes it produces. Just things that come to my mind as a teacher.
For sure, yeah. And I like what you said about how you could also create a third or an additional variable. Mm-hmm. And linkage, have that be randomly generated as well. Because then you could do things like you could have possibly different conjugations of the to be verb, right? Because right now I just have is, but you could, change that up and have are or were or whatever. And then instead of having like, you could have as, because the simile can also use as. So yeah, there's some different ways you could play with that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Great. So anything else before I move on?
No, let's see. What am I looking at next? You're going to tell us what natural language processing is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So now that we've had the chance to look at a program that's using some of these basic natural language processing principles, such as language rules, let's chat just briefly about what natural language processing is in sort of a larger context. So natural language processing, often called NLP, is the area of computer science that explores how computer systems can be taught to recognize and respond to human verbal and written communication. And so there are a lot of technologies that use this aspect of computer science. And so whenever you use a computer system that is detecting your written text or language, like Google or Alexa, Microsoft Word, Grammarly, chatbots, or any other technologies, we are benefiting from natural language processing. And in the slides, I have a couple of links to videos that explain a bit more about machine learning and NLP. So machine learning is, there's different things like probability and statistical models that are part of machine learning that are used a lot in NLP in creating some of these technologies. And so if anyone is interested in getting into that a little bit more, there's a couple links in the slides. One is part of a Python tutorial, and the instructor, he just provides a little bit of background about machine learning that I find very accessible and interesting. And then the second link is from a professor whose main focus is on some of the challenges of NLP when working with Arabic. But at the beginning of the presentation, he gives a really good sort of foundational introduction as to what NLP is. And then the rest of his presentation is also interesting also. But so there's those resources. And then if you want to go to the next slide that says why at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to kind of take a step back and look at, why is natural language processing or making programs in the learning language classroom, language learning classroom, why is that something that we should think about or consider? So in our simile generator example, we used the rules of language and some simple code to write a program. And by doing this, we are using some of the principles of NLP at a very basic level. One of the really cool things about working with NLP, or perhaps in any computer science discipline, is that you can do some really simple projects like that, or you can get very complex and use some of those statistical probability models that I mentioned to determine relationships between words and perform actions on them. And as I've kind of already mentioned, it can be really valuable to expose students to some of these natural language processing programs for the sake of reinforcing their knowledge of the English language. I haven't done any peer-reviewed scientific studies on this, but I'll just say it as my opinion, that learning how to code requires you to think categorically, just as you have to do when you're learning a new human language, when you have to learn about things like verbs and nouns in any language. If you're learning English, you have to learn about these different categories. And then same thing in a programming language, you have to learn about sort of the different categories that are involved in the terminology. And so I think that learning programs can reinforce that cognitive thinking skill as well, of thinking categorically. And as teachers, we might be interested in exposing students to computer science for the sake of helping them learn programming skills related to career interests. This is, of course, kind of more a tangential benefit. I'm not sure exactly, what the trend is outside of the United States, but within the United States, there is a growing trend to push, to at least expose students to computer science even across disciplines. And so if there's a teacher who's teaching English who maybe has some sort of interest in this or maybe has some sort of institutional requirements or whatever to introduce students to computer science, integrating NLP in that English context might be a good way to do that. And then if you want to go to the slide, I think it's right after that. Mm. Oh yeah, so the slide that says using NLP projects to reinforce language knowledge. So as I mentioned, I did write a 50-page curriculum that includes the instructions for the project that I just talked about. And this curriculum starts off with reviewing rules of language with students, like parts of speech and literary devices. And it's a document that basically functions as a worksheet for students to write in their answers to the grammar and the coding exercises. After they review the language elements in the curriculum, I ask students to articulate the rules of those elements so that they can more closely examine them. And then after looking at those things, I then introduce students to some basic Python principles and guide them as they walk through the Python project. So if you know, feel free to check out that curriculum and try out some of those ideas. And I'd love to hear any feedback on how you adapt that or how that goes. And then I think even if you don't use that particular curriculum, you can still kind of follow the basic flow using whatever specific materials you like. You know, first making sure that students understand rules of language, second, having them articulate those rules, and then third, teaching them some basic Python, and then finally having them use the language rules that they've articulated to write some basic programs. And that's basically the flow and the philosophy that I use in the curriculum. So I think, you know, whatever specific materials you want to use, you can still kind of follow that philosophy. Any questions or comments at this point?
Yeah, I wandered from your slide. I clicked on your portfolio link. And anyway, basically putting that on the screen, I guess that's going on in the share. And you were talking to you, which part of your portfolio were you talking about? I think the introduction to natural language processing, the first one, the curriculum developed. Okay. But if I hit that one, so it's going to take me to a Word document that won't share. But I do have it highlighted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're in the right place. So that section, in that section on my portfolio, I have several different resources. Most of them are Word documents. Mm-hmm. The last one is a PowerPoint. But yeah, it's all free for anyone to download and take a look at. There's a document there, and it has the teacher version, and then I have a student version.
Yes.
And the main difference between the two is that I have like some grammar exercises, and so the answers to the grammar exercises are in the teacher version, but not in the student version. That's really the only difference. And then there's a list of resources, and then there is a PowerPoint there as well, where I've gone through, like I mentioned, when I was working at Tinker, I found a lot of parallels between coding and English language arts. And so in that power, and one of those connections was natural language processing, but there were others as well, such as how learning to write a program actually parallels in some ways learning to write an essay. So, for example, when you're getting ready to write a program, you might put together some pseudocode that's similar to writing an outline when you're doing an essay. And there are just some other parallels. And so if people are interested in kind of some of those other connections between English language arts or writing and coding, that PowerPoint could be a good resource to check out.
You said you didn't know how things were here, so I'm going to click on the link that says Teo Yuang Tech brings NASA and coding to Malaysia. So that should come up on the screen. And it is doing that. So here's a guy I didn't even know existed. This is my country, this is where I live. So
that's it.
Yeah, and there's a video here. He's talking about teaching students computer science and why he's doing that. Learning code is very important for individuals. That's why I moved back to Miri to help prepare the next generation for a future. Okay, so anyway, basically, that's interesting. I don't know if we can go through it all here. Anyway, I'm just looking at it here on the screen. Let's see, I'll go back to your presentation. Okay, so, but I have connected with other people here in Malaysia who are also interested in teaching coding, and I was giving some workshops in Thailand and Cambodia just recently, January and February. And had some people from Malaysia come to the workshops. And So I connected with them. But basically, those were workshops for English teachers. So the one I did in Malaysia, in Cambodia. Did I say Malaysia? I meant Cambodia. The one I did in Cambodia, I recorded. I took the computer and I turned it. I put it in Zoom and I turned it toward the audience. So I got me kind of standing in front like this, you know, and then the audience, which was very substantial, interacting with the concept. So it was really interesting. I had them come up and talk to me about them. Anyway, we did a game, and whoever solved it would come up and tell me how they solved it. So it's really interesting. I'll put the link in somewhere. I don't know if you've come across that. It's really going to be kind of difficult to get at the link right now. Have you seen that one? Are you aware of that?
I've seen the video of you where you were talking about Battleship. Is that the one that you're referring to? Yeah, so I watched
In Cambodia, that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm.
So, anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and my idea was that you could teach. That was that was from a set of materials for teaching coding as language exercise. So the idea is that how would you sort? I think it was sorting and also search. That was actually a search aspect. So
mm-hmm.
How do you design something that will search? It gave you a couple of different algorithms you could use, pseudo algorithms, I suppose you could call them. And then how many moves using one of these algorithms would it take you to find the battleship? So which one is the best one? So how would you narrow it down? You know, how would you narrow down where the battleship is? And that's what people were coming up and talking about. Oh, I found the battleship. Okay. How did you do it? You know, so anyway, it was quite interesting. Those were language teachers. So the idea is to give them ideas for, can you do this in your EFL language class in Cambodia? Would you get students interested?
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fantastic. There's so many different ways that you can integrate it. And like you said, getting them to talk about those concepts in English, like that's perfect for that you know, learning English context.
Yeah, and the hook for those was teaching language through coding without a computer. So that's why I chose those particular exercises. You didn't need a computer. I gave them worksheets, and they're exercising algorithms by you know, just working on worksheets, basically. So they're getting the idea of algorithms, and you could do this with students, and coding comes after. I suppose that's really pseudocode. That's pre-computer pseudo.
Yeah.
I'm on the page. I'm on the slide that says my background, by the way.
Oh yeah, okay. I just wanted to say one more thing about that article you pulled up about the teacher in Malaysia. So that is an article that I wrote while I was at Tinker. I had the opportunity to interview that teacher.
Ah.
So it was kind of, yeah. So what happened was Tinker had a partnership with NASA, and they did this whole summer coding challenge, basically, where kids would basically code a mission patch within Tinker. So they would use the code blocks to make some sort of animation, of a mission patch, a space mission patch in Tinker. And then they would submit that to us. And then we, chose some winners from around the world. And then those winners got to have a video chat with a NASA engineer or someone else who worked for NASA. And so there was this student in Malaysia who was one of the winners. And so I got to talk with his teacher, who had basically facilitated this whole project on their end and had helped the student put together their projects and submit them. And so that was a pretty cool experience. And one of the things that was interesting, so at least here in the States, there are a lot of different learn to code platforms like Thinkbird, code.org, and Scratch, and a few others. And so I think in the classroom, as far as I can tell, there's definitely kind of a general knowledge of, oh yeah, we can use block coding, and it connects to English language arts, because you can maybe make something that has to do with a story. And so you're using story time skills. And that can be a way that it connects. But then when I was talking to this person in Malaysia, he was saying, oh yeah, it's cool, you know, that Tinker has these different features available. But what we're looking for next is some classes that are appropriate for a school age audience, but that deal with more sophisticated topics such as data science. And so it was just kind of interesting talking to him and also kind of, you know, looking at what's happening here and seeing that there are some pockets and some areas where maybe students are ready to kind of take that interdisciplinary coding to the next level and not just do the block coding, but maybe see how it connects more closely with other disciplines, which is where I think, you know, what you've done in your work with English language students, and maybe some of this natural language processing stuff can kind of help fill that niche. Yeah, so then looking at the last slide here, I mean, I pretty much already talked about this, but it just has a little bit more about my background and what I've done, and then I have the link to the portfolio there as well. Mm-hmm. And then I think just on the last slide, I just have my email address and my LinkedIn and my portfolio link as well.
So, oh, yeah, I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a lot shorter than before.
Yeah. Okay. And so, yeah. So if there's anyone who would like to, you know, learn more about this, you know, I'm happy to talk more and see kind of what we can learn from each other in regards to this work. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm surprised nobody else came, although I'm not surprised, but you know, it just because the subject is so interesting to me. And it's surprising sometimes what attracts people, because we've had a lot of people come to most of our webinars, but I suppose, you know, coding kind of scares people a little bit. They don't know how to relate to it, but you know, really, I think it's the wave of the future. You know, it's and that's also Jennifer Verschoor, who co-wrote this article with me. She's, well, first of all, she's in Argentina, which is your time zone. So, but she's very busy. She's constantly doing presentations and things like that. So anyway, I'm sure she probably watched the recording in any event. So
yeah.
What are you, where do you go from here? What is your, do you have anything you can show us besides what we've, you don't have a text chat really. So you don't have, I'm wondering how how can I get things from you? You could email them to me, I suppose. Email me links, I could put them in there.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you show us that of a practical nature beyond what you've put in your slideshow?
No, I think that's about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you were just asking as far as going from here. I mean, one thing that I thought a lot about is, I mean, one of the, I think, inherent limitations of the kind of curriculum that I've written is that it does require students to download and use Python on a computing machine. But that is something that's not accessible to everyone, right? Because they don't have, maybe not everyone has computers, or if they use some sort of school-issued machine, they don't have permissions to do certain kind of downloads or whatever. And so what would be cool would be to see this sort of idea, these ideas translated into an actual product, some sort of app or just online platform that uses the ideas and walks students through the projects that they can just pull up, you know, on whatever device they have, whether it's a smartphone or whatever, and that has the like a coding interface built in, which is what most of the learn to code platforms have, is they have their own built-in coding interface so that people don't have to download anything separately. And so I think, you know, if I were to develop this further, that would probably be the next step. And so I've thought about it, and I'm just kind of exploring some options on that front. But yeah.
You mentioned, I heard you mention Scratch at one point. Was that, did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so Scratch is a block coding language that was developed out of MIT. And I believe it was kind of one of the first of its kind. Because when I've looked at what Tinker has, a lot of the different projects that Tinker has that they invite kids to do are very similar to the Scratch one. So I don't want to say, oh, it's Tinker is just a copycat, but I will say that Tinker has like Scratch has been an influence on the development of Tinker, I would say. But yeah, it's just a block programming language out of MIT.
And what is Tinker exactly?
Yeah, so Tinker is a program. I mean, if you were to go to Tinker.com,
okay,
and if you were a student or a parent, you could sign up for a free account initially, and then, you know, you can pay for some additional features later. But basically, you can just do different coding projects using block coding mostly. And so a kid can put together different coding blocks, and then they can, there's a screen within their coding interface where they can see, oh, I put these blocks together, and then this thing moves, or there's some other effect that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of their main product. And they also have projects where kids can do stuff with JavaScript or HTML or Python, some of those, the real world programming languages and tools.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also integrate with things like drones and robots.
Mm-hmm.
It has those types of integration, and they're a pretty big player in this space. They're trying to sort of, at least when I left, they were trying to sort of shift from having their main kid base being in sort of the third to maybe fifth grade range. That was kind of like the target range, was like those middle elementary grades. They were trying to branch out, and so they developed something for Junior, which is a program for kids who don't know how to read yet, because the normal Tinker product has words written on the code block. So with Tinker Junior, there's no words involved. And so they just are basically putting, different blocks together. And they're still sort of getting that idea of like cause and effect, but there's no like words involved that they have to read. And then, so when I left, they were kind of trying to market themselves as like the K-12 complete coding solution, and have things on sort of all aspects of that spectrum. So I think they're a fairly substantial player in that space.
And you're no longer working with Tinker,
right?
Mm-hmm. And what are you doing now?
So prior to the pandemic outbreak, I was tutoring, and I had been hired by a tutoring center, and then the center shut down when we got the shelter in place order. So now I'm just working at a retail, like an essential retail place, while I'm continuing to apply for more opportunities in either ed tech or education.
Okay, and so are you looking to how are you going to take these ideas into classrooms? I mean, obviously, you can go to the site and sign up for the courses or the experiences. Oh, it says free access to premium coding courses during school closures. Oh, nice. Okay. So Tinker is allowing people access to these courses. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ideally, I would love to work for a company where I can sort of develop this further. So, for example, I'm interviewing with a company right now where they do STEM integration. So STEM being science, technology, engineering, math. And so they create STEM curriculum for different subjects. And so working for a company like that, I think would be really amenable to bringing some of these ideas into the curriculum and into the classroom. If I don't get a position that, where I can do that, I would probably just do it on my own and try to just build the product on my own. I've looked into a couple of different options for doing that. There are some, you know, already built like instructional design tools. I think there's something called Adobe Captivate. There's some websites where you can pay them to basically host your online course if you want to go that route. Or if I wanted to build a website from the ground up, I could learn more programming and do it that way. So I'm just kind of trying to figure out the best way to build it into some sort of online platform.
Okay.
And you mentioned that you have built a course, so you probably have some insight into building courses.
You mean when I was working, when I was teaching LACL or now? Courses, I don't know what you're talking about, the software I developed.
Sorry. Maybe I misunderstood, but I thought at one point you mentioned that you had designed an online course, but maybe I misheard.
I was working at a software company called Courseware Products International in San Jose. That's actually what I was doing there in California. We were working in authorware at the time. And authorware, is that right? That's the macromedia project, the macromedia. I'm pretty sure it was called authorware. Anyway, or authorware could be something else. It's a long time ago. It was 20 years ago. So anyhow, we were creating software for language learning, and the concept we were working on at the time was developing a game where someone got on a train and got in conversation with the person sitting opposite him, and the story developed from there. He was in a scenario, somebody had died, I suppose, and he was going to find out about it. He got involved in the scenario. Anyway, there's a story there, and the way the story progressed was you spoke to the person that you were interlocuting, and the program picked up it was not the speech recognition that you use in robot tools where they have a certain set of, well, no, I'm not, okay. Basically, you had to, when you spoke, it had to be something that the software would anticipate, then the software could branch accordingly. So, and we developed a game which had an outcome. You could work through the game, and you're speaking always to characters in the game. And I worked on the speech recognition aspects using the software that we got from Stanford University. We were working with them. But anyway, so it was basically a game where you interacted with people in the game, speaking to them, and then they would do something accordingly or come back to you accordingly. But it had to recognize what you said to them. So that means that we'd prompt them. You could choose from three different prompts. So the person would say something to you, and you could choose, well, I'll say this, I'll say this, I'll say this. But you had to say one of those things, and the software would understand what you had said. And it worked pretty well. Or the software would say, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that, or something like that. So, you know, so, and I had to work with that and make that work. That was my, and we coded it. In I think it was authorware, or hoping I'm not confusing it with somebody. You know, it was a macromedia product at the time, and yeah, so it was a coding language that worked in icons, and you lined up the icons, the blocks, I suppose, and set parameters within the blocks. And we had a company that was doing that. We had a graphics artist who was doing that as well. So that was called Tracy Talk. And if you go to vancestevens.com/papers, you could search for Tracy Talk, and you could find reviews of it and things like that.
Cool. Wow, that sounds super interesting. And so it sounds like to build that product, you were using basically natural language processing, right? Like if you, sorry.
Yeah, we didn't have to design it. We were using
an
end product. An end product that it was a Microsoft product it was working on allophones. It would pick up, it could understand what people were saying as long as it said something that was anticipated. As long as the user said something anticipated, it could then detect that. So we were having to tweak it so that it could understand what people were going to say. So we said, I'm going to do this. And the user says, I'm going to do this. That's not I'm going to, it's I'm going to. Then I would have to anticipate that could be one option that this software would want to pick up. And we tested it with in different countries. And I went to Chile, for example, to try it out there. And it did fairly well with different accents, as long as the allophones were there. So, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. So did you have sort of like a repository or a list of accepted responses? And then the person would say something, and then it would basically check that response against the list. Okay.
There was a multiple choice. So the student, the learner could say this, this, or this. So there are three choices, and the learner had to say one of those. Or the learner could also say something else like Tracy. That's what Tracy talk is, teacher ranging across the computer interface. So the learner could say Tracy, and they would bring up a PDA, basically, a personal digital assistant that would then help the learner interpret what was being said. So this, but everything the learner spoke to it had to be anticipated. So it wasn't understanding anything. It wasn't natural language processing in that respect. I suppose that would have to work on natural language processing. But this was basically just comparing what the learner said. In other words, you know, when you talk to a robot on the phone and it says, what's your social security number? You say, you know, 482-3796 or something like that. And the computer understands those numbers because those numbers are in its set that it's supposed to be. And if you go beyond that, you say, what am I supposed to do? The robot will come back and say, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that, or something like that. So, and eventually it'll say, I need to pass you to a sales agent, which is what you're trying to get to do anyway. But so that's an example of that kind of thing where it has a set of responses that it's expecting, and it can detect which one of those you said. But it's interesting to build that into an interface where someone is trying to learn a language, you know, through going through a story, and there were lots of language help aspects built into it.
So I mean, as far as, you know, designing a course for this going forward, if you have any like ideas on the best sort of platform to use, I'm definitely open to that. Or you know, I have that contact information in the slides if people like want to learn more about that.
Let's stay in touch. There are not a lot of people doing this, and we are two of them, and there are others. And so, let's keep in touch about this. This is something I'm very interested in. Jennifer for sure is quite interested in it. And you know, it's always on my back burner. And right now, I'm doing a lot of webcasts and getting to know people who are in lockdown, and what are they doing in lockdown, and how are they helping each other cope with this situation. So that's the purpose of Talon. But it's so nice to meet people actually online. And so sorry more people didn't come and meet us personally or here in in the bits and bytes that we are. But this will be recorded, and you'll find it at learningtogether.net. I'm backed up a little bit. I'll try to get to it tomorrow, but Anyway, I have nothing on for the next couple of days. So tomorrow or the next day, this will be online and blogged, and you'll be able to find it there.
Okay, that sounds great. And I'm definitely going to check out your papers that you wrote about that product that mm-hmm. you created. Can you, or that you were involved with? Can you tell me again the name of that product? Yeah.
Teacher Ranging Across the Computer Interface. So that's TRACI Talk. And the company has gone defunct, and we have our CDs from there, but we can't get them to work on Windows 10 computers. So, you know, I don't know. Anyway, if you have old computers, you can get those CDs to work. But anyhow, but it was an interesting concept. I worked on it with Phil Hubbard. I don't know if you know Phil Hubbard, Dr. Phil Hubbard, who was at Stanford University, and he's a good friend, colleague. So anyhow, but it was really nice to talk to you about your work. And this is Karen Schwartz that I'm talking to from California, where it's getting on about 8 o'clock in the morning. And me, it's getting on at 10 o'clock at night, which isn't really late. Anyhow, we've been talking for an hour, so I guess that's probably as long as people want to listen to a recording. And this is Learning Together episode, what did I say, 461st episode of Learning Together, but we just started Talon, so this is only the 14th episode of Talon. And anyway, we're in May 11th, 2020. We're in the, I don't know, how's things going in California? Are you under any kind of lockdown? Because you're Gavin, what was his name, Gavin, the governor?
Yeah, Gavin Newsom. Yeah, we are. So until May 31st, that's mm-hmm. the current deadline. But even with that, there have been some lessening of restrictions. So, for example, people who are in the golf industries and the construction industries, those were some of the first ones to have some of the shelter in place and restrictions lifted, and as well as essential or childcare for essential workers. I believe that they're just continuing to sort of gradually release some of the restrictions on different industries. With the caveat that industries do need to have social distancing protocols in place as the restrictions are lifted going out, but or going forward. But yeah, right now, you know, we're not able to return to activities like being in groups in public, or you know, being in worship places or schools or things mm-hmm. like that. So, how is it in Malaysia?
Malaysia is doing pretty well, at least where I am in Penang. They haven't had any new cases lately. It's been declared a green zone. So the main thing now is to keep people out of Penang. So the rest of Malaysia is a different story, especially down in Kuala Lumpur, where there's lots of density and people have different mentality. But here in Penang, people are, you know, they're obeying the, we call it MCO, Movement Control Order. So, and it's been extended to June 9th. But now I think in a couple of days, they're going to let us out for exercise. A lot of people have been doing exercise. I've been walking to other townships near here and buying things. So you can go out for food within a 10-kilometer radius. I don't have a car, so it's quite easy for me to go walking. So, but it'll be nice to be able to go walking without carrying a shopping bag.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, here it's kind of funny because we've had the shelter in place, which technically means you're not supposed to leave your house except to go grocery shopping or go take care of medical needs and things like that. But we have been allowed to go out and exercise. So the trails, actually, like the walking trails, hiking trails out here, mm-hmm. have actually been packed. More packed than I've ever seen them. And so, so it's just kind of interesting because so many things are closed and a lot of workplaces are closed, things like that. And people are working from home. And so they have more time, presumably. There's just, you know, people are going into the trails. And so there is, I think, kind of a risk there because they do tend to get packed. And so I usually wear a mask if I'm out walking out there and if there's going to be a lot of people. But there's definitely people out there who are, you can tell, like they're just groups of friends hanging out, and technically that's not allowed. So hopefully, I mean, it sounds like we're definitely not like out of the woods yet by any means, but things are getting better. Things are getting better based on the fact that they are lessening some of the restrictions. But you know, hopefully we keep going on that upward, you know, on that positive trend, and we don't have like a relapse into a worse situation.
Inevitably, there'll be a relapse. Yeah, one thing, a little tip for you. You know, these little things that you put around your neck and carry conference bags, or you know what I mean, like a conference badge, the little lanyard that goes around your neck.
Oh, okay. You
take that and you attach it to your mask. You can take your mask off and it's dangling there. When someone comes along, you can slip it back on again. So I find that to be quite handy walking around town. So I see someone, I slip my mask on really quickly. And I, it makes it a lot more pleasant not having to wear it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it'll be nice. So like I mentioned, I'm working at an essential retailer right now. So I wear a mask when I'm in there and everyone's wearing masks. And it'll be interesting, you know, once we get to the point, if I'm still working there and we don't have to wear the masks anymore, it'll be like, oh, I can see everyone's faces now. Like just little things like that you don't think about, like think being able to see other people's faces.
People are going to self-regulate. I mean, me, I'm going to wear a mask. I just noticed when I go out, I don't touch anything. So, you know, before I would casually lean on something, but you're walking down the steps, you don't touch the rails, you know? So like, there's so many changes that you're making just mentally, protect yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Anyhow, well, look, stay safe where you are. And,
Yeah,
and we'll get in touch and maybe find we're on LinkedIn connections now, so you know, we'll stay in touch and see if there are any intersections coming up.
Yeah, and thanks again so much for having me on and for setting everything up. So,
yeah, wish it'd been more populated, but you never know, people do listen to the recordings. So anyhow, I'll have yours up. You can play this and you can. Well, anyway, I'll let you know when it's up. Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
Sounds good. Thanks, Vance.
Sure.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good rest of your night. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.